Hey, it's A24, and this is the A24 podcast. For this episode, we brought together two of the most talented young musicians scoring films today, Daniel Lopatin, aka 10tricks.never, and Mika Levy, also known as Mika Chu. Mika composed the score for one of our earliest releases, Jonathan Glazer's Under the Skin, while Daniel scored the Safdie Brothers' Good Time. The resulting conversation is utterly unique and one of our favorites. We hope you enjoy it as much as we did.
I'm Daniel Lopatin. I'm talking on the A24 podcast.
I'm Mika. I'm talking the A24 podcast.
And we're talking to each other on the A24 podcast.
Thanks for inviting me to have a conversation with you.
You're welcome. I always want to talk to you. I don't talk to you enough, so this is my excuse to talk to you more. You know what's funny? The first time we had an interaction, me and you, you hit me up on YouTube.
Yeah.
And it was Mikachu and the Shapes, and it said, hey, I really like your video. Maybe you can make me a video someday.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how I remember us like meeting, not in person, but yeah, in, I think it was around 2009, I saw your video, and it said, it was at the time, it was Point Never, and the video was Nobody's Here. And it had this triangle. I'm not sure if this is where it's from, but it reminded me of Mario Kart, the rainbow level. I watched that probably at least twice a day for quite a while. And I think I used it to kind of like make friends with other people and stuff like that. I really loved it.
Oh,
and so that's why
sweet.
I wrote to you. And then we had an email thread, which started, yeah, around that time.
Yeah, and then years go by.
Yeah.
It's kind of in a way comforting though, you know, when you just know in music it's tough, everybody's kind of in their own orbit, mostly respectful and nice. And then when you encounter each other on the road or at some event or something, it's so nice. It's like you can tell some war stories and stuff like that. It's like a club. It's nice. I don't think I have any kind of thing like that other than music. My friends are, it's different, you know, you tell your friends everything, but it's kind of nice to just have friends that know what you do, like on the sort of boring level, and just kind of encounter them here and there and talk about what horrible atrocities
have happened on the road.
Yeah, exactly. No, but yeah, so I guess we didn't see each other for a long time, but then got to play a show together at the Barbican. That was really sweet. I watched
Thanks again for that.
Oh, yeah, of course. And I watched you on the little monitor in the dressing room. That was cool. All right, let's get into it. Enough chit-chat. Enough small talk. Mika, you picked up music from your folks who were teaching music? Or?
Yeah, that's right. I played the violin when I was really young in school, and you know the Suzuki method? I did that. And I guess music has a bit of a story in my family. On my dad's side, his dad played the violin. And I really enjoyed it. Yeah. So I did it a lot. I guess it was like something
ingrained.
I knew, yeah. And also no one, there weren't that many other kids around me who did it. So it felt a bit, you know, it was kind of.
It was radical.
My own thing. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. How about you?
Yeah. My mom was my piano teacher. And.
Oh, how did that, was that.
Not good.
Yeah. That's.
It's sketchy.
Yeah. Yeah. But.
On top of which, you know. Russian method.
Oh, yeah. That's so very strong.
Strong, too strong for American born, first generation American kid. Mm. It didn't deter me from loving music. Because my dad was in all these bands, you know? He was like a rocker.
Okay.
And my mom was a classically trained piano player and musicologist.
Okay, yeah.
And they had found this common ground. They're cool. They're both really cool. You know, in this way of having, you know, it's like growing up with parents that fill the house with sound of any kind. I think is really positive.
Totally, 100%. Yeah.
It's like this other frequency of life. You know, a house without music is just this different thing.
I don't know.
I don't know what it would.
I don't
be
know
like.
What that's like. Yeah, but.
And also it's. It's pretty happy, right? It's like, you know, you can be arguing about this and that, but you'll end up usually just arguing about music, which is fun.
So what's your mom, what did your mom, because my dad is also a musicologist, but his thing was music from the Third Reich. He was writing for magazines and things like that, and he did this paper about, you know, this degenerative music thing, and, you know, that whole time then. And I think from that he developed this job, basically, where he talked a lot about that sort of thing, well, like many kind of political and musical kind of crossover issues. Is that similar to what your mum specialised in? Or
I'm curious if that was even possible in the Soviet Union, is to kind of like have this highly specialised thing. But no, like my mom was basically just kind of a student of the history of...
Was it just Russian music or
classical? No, it was Western classical canon. Like, when were the kind of the critical moments where things would shift, and why did they shift? Early music or before that, when it was just chanting and there was this monophonic
divine
thing, and then suddenly there was the octaves, and then there was these intervallic relationships, and then people started creating all of these incredible math, really.
Do you feel like that stuff is coming into play more now, the technicals? Do you feel like you got it under your belt, even if you're not thinking on it, kind of thing?
The technical stuff, the sort of all of the amazing wisdom that she had was irrelevant to me until I was well into my 20s.
Do you think that those things take a while to actually kick in? I feel like I didn't know what was going on at all during most of going to school. And then there's some moments I have now, and I left school like 100 years ago now. I don't know, even if it's like a math thing, or a science thing, or some image will pop into my head and I think, wow, that's crazy. I haven't even thought about that for ages, but somehow it's like gone into my brain somewhere in the early days. I've almost like actively ignored it, but now it's kind of showing itself, you know.
I wish, to be honest, I wish, because I was
fingers crossed.
I wasn't a good student, but you know what? it's okay. I mean, I think you're probably right on some level, because there was some kind of basic harmony training thing going on there when she was really just giving me the basics, like circle of fifths.
Yeah,
that's pretty much what I ran with
that stuff, yeah.
Right, like that's kind of all I needed, and then I figured out the rest through just messing around and listening to records. I think me and you probably have a lot in common here, and I'm this is just a hunch, but scoring
how
a film
to score
a... I love this topic, to be honest. I think people are generally very confused about how these things happen, and they always happen differently. But I'm a very intuitive composer. I'm just searching. I'm just like in the dark feeling, and I'm not thinking about points I have to hit. And I'm not generally thinking about anything other than really core feelings.
Like one of the larger films that involve continuous or nearly continuous score that kind of goes under dialogue, and then it's like people jumping off a cliff, and then it's next and next and next. Do you mean that kind of style?
Yes, Jerry Goldsmith. Like, okay, yeah. My favorite. I mean, he's incredible. And then even sort of his acolytes are like Richard Band, like a lot of these guys do action and horror. I love this stuff, and because they're essentially like athletic. They're following some kind of incredible sense of pacing, rhythmic structure, cinematic rhythm, and figuring out how to use a fairly large orchestra or medium-sized orchestra to reinforce what's already there, right? Mm-hmm. That's how I feel about it. So for me, it's like that was never on the table the way until I did this. I mean, to me, Good Time, the Safdie Brothers, is an action movie, and they forced me to think this way.
Yeah, you have that. I was gonna
say. And I had to do it.
Yeah. That's cool.
It was amazing, but it's not. It's essentially like I want my most. I'm like a house composer as house cat. Like I want to be like in the dark, kind of feeling intuitively, looking around for music.
I mean, from my perspective, yeah, I just try and generate music, and that might be to do. It will be to do with the film that I'm working on, and led by those images, and have it a bit there, but then just generate music, because that's how it all starts. I find that when I've got the film there and I start making music, it's already like, it's not too much of a struggle to like catch a kind of feeling from the film, and that come out pretty quickly on the keyboard. I don't know.
And
all the hard work comes later.
Getting it
to
pinpoint
work. Yeah.
Precision, all of that.
I think so.
Yeah, I agree. And I almost don't need the film. It's so funny. Like, you know, you probably encountered this scenario where you're sent a script to read and then it could excite you, like titillate you or not, be like, if it excites me, that might just be enough. Those people that like will draw you a picture on the street of like how you look like instantaneously, and it's like for tourists and stuff.
Yeah.
That's like what I want to do for a director. I'm essentially like, look, it's you, right? And if they agree.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's a good metaphor, yeah.
I don't think it's really like a lot of conversations necessary. Like I do things that I want to do in a very honest way, I hope. When I'm excited, that's me. And if it works, then there's work to be done.
I find that it's pretty obvious when it works and when it doesn't with music against the picture, because which kind of makes it easy on one hand and then doesn't on the other, because sometimes it's like it's not working, and you just got to keep on kind of. It's so trippy how putting different things underneath a picture, underneath the video, the image, just like completely how it can just keep on changing. You've been looking at the same thing for ages and you think, I can't watch this anymore, I don't even know my ass from my elbow, and like, what's going on? And then like, it'll be the weirdest timing of some random frequency or some percussive hit or anything that goes with the swing of like some guy 50 yards away in the crowd of the image you're looking at, and you're like, yeah,
I know,
this looks so good.
That's so satisfying for us.
So random. Right?
It's so crazy how that's really like the catnip for us,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's the shit. Like,
do you have a cat?
No, I guess I keep talking about these cats.
You mentioned
cats like three times.
Three or four times.
I think I need a cat.
I think I am a cat. One.
I don't know anything about cats. I've never had a pet. My parents like prohibited them. My grandfather got a rabbit and he put it in he hollowed out a television, an old tube.
Oh yeah, yeah, I see what
TV
you mean.
To make
they used
a
to
cage.
Be really fat.
Yeah, they're big.
Yeah.
So he got this big wooden TV. He took out the guts of it and he put it like a fence around the front.
And put a rabbit in.
Put a rabbit in there and said, "Here's your pet."
That's pretty far out.
Yeah, and then I came home and there was bloody rabbit paw prints on the driveway because it ran away. Anyway, so long story short, there was this moment that I really, really love in Good Time where I was there was some scene, it was like an isometric like chopper shot of like a overpass or something like that, and you could see that the sort of like, I don't remember exactly what it was, but
motorway.
It was a motorway.
Highway. What do you call it?
Highway. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
The geometry of this particular like moment was such that it made me think like heavily about panning and cars and the way cars move, but the camera's moving also, so you have this like weird gyroscopic thing going, and you have a lot of different things. So it's like, this is sound. So very like quietly, very subtly, I put in things that sort of referred to the geometry that was happening in there, and thought it was just fun for me. But Josh noticed it. He's very inquisitive about this kind of stuff, and he was like, "No, this is what you need to do all the time. This is how you create this atmosphere that we don't need to know about in terms of
melodic,
right? We don't need to know about it." And it was such an interesting in between space, because I'm such a hater of like underscore and anything really middle. It's like cliche, but nobody wants to be middle. That's what everyone says, and they're kind of right.
Mm-hmm.
And an underscore is kind of middle, right? Mm-hmm. But there's this other thing you can do that's under the underscore.
It's more psychological, almost. So you're kind of messing there with it, like sound image. Which is kind of the area of sound design more normally, right? Like,
right. It's not usually the composer's
roles.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Jerry Goldsmith's not rocking the.
No, he's got his stereo.
Yeah, exactly.
He's just or probably mono.
So anyway, there is stuff like fun stuff like that that is not really, I don't know, it's important. It's becoming more important to the way I think about the job. And you know what I was going to say also is like, I was going to ask you a question, because you say it's so interesting how by putting different things underneath a scene, it's going to just like vastly alter it, and it just could be hilarious or could be totally wrong or just completely poignant depending on these modifications. But you know what I think is actually really inspiring about your music especially your scores, is that it feels to me like there's a decisions are made as to what kinds of sounds you're going to use and what sounds you're not going to use and what the flavor is of the thing. And you play within that area so well, and all of the variety that you generate is still going on within this really, really unique, like, monolithic voice. What I got from Under the Skin, like that one track, Love, right? It's like kind of the banger, right? Because there's a lot of stuff on that score that's like atmosphere. Mm. And to me, Love becomes somehow like the template that you built. You create this whole world of love-like music on Jackie, to me, in a sense. Mm-hmm. That sort of like beautiful taffy. It's like this beautiful, like, kind of mellotrons that are just dripping and falling apart everywhere and just stretching. And it's such a like specific world. And I think by tethering to that like really specific thing that you created, don't you feel like once you've determined that, you're good? Like, you can find all of these variations on any things, maybe melodically or maybe in terms of sort of added texture, the dynamism, but the your voice is really in place in your music, I think.
Well, no, I'm going to kind of say the same thing. I mean, I think the same thing of your music and what you've done in films. I mean, I guess what I'm trying to say is my experience so far of doing films is like, I guess there's some areas that I'm more familiar with in which I can, like, more textures and instruments and things like that. Things are changing every time a little bit, so nothing's like that solid. I don't feel like really that I have sorted anything out quite yet. But I guess it's all like led by the film and stuff like that. But to try and have that kind of sorted, or to try and think of the sound world for the film, helps me to then be able to, yeah, express myself within that. Otherwise,
yes,
having, you know, I mean, I feel like electronic music is kind of like the best game ever. That's like a million levels, like
exactly
way beyond Warcraft or anything like that. You literally could, you will play it for the rest of your life, and it's very kind of cosmic and stratospheric and just keeps on kind of relentlessly going. So I, you know, it's important at the front for me to kind of just like reduce all that to the point where actually now I might have just been stuck on one level for a bit. Like, maybe I need to,
I don't know,
spend some coins.
When,
you know,
your level,
like,
is
buy
probably
a new shield, buy,
yeah, you
new
have
some weapon, whatever.
Resident Evil 4 attaché available cubes to fill with a bazooka. You definitely do, and you can do that. But it is absolutely like a gift as just a fan of music when you hear something that's so clear, and it's so decisive. It's so decisive. It's like you've crafted something that just sounds like you in that world. And it will change. And of course you won't want to, you know, do what you already have done or whatever. But there is something really special about this, watching you go from Under the Skin to Jackie. And okay, those two films being, you know, being like a body of work so far that just to me is impeccable. I'm telling you,
you're making me sweat, man.
It's good. It's really good. And it was, you know, it's very, very interesting. Very interesting to listen to.
Have you found that now you're making more? First of all, have you written any music for, have you ever written, just speaking of games, have you ever written for a computer game? Or would you make your own computer game and then write for it? I feel like you would have to be on the game side of it as well.
It's funny because all of my sort of that, all that my gaming came in handy with Good Time, because action on screen requires you to think about the scale of intensity from one moment to the next more than a quieter film.
Yeah, right.
And
it's so it's like an amazing,
it's an amazing challenge. And games are so relevant, right? Because they literally have an engine that triggers these dynamic
musical bits. Like,
bits. Like, so somebody composed
so
things with three
I
levels
know,
of intensity.
It's crazy, yeah.
Somebody made a mellow version, like almost an emergency, and then like a full-on emergency.
Yeah.
And so when I was thinking about that, I was like, okay, so let's break up every scene into video game intensity levels.
That's
like,
really cool.
Are we? And that helped them too, because they were like, so they were thinking about Good Time as a kind of a live action Grand Theft Auto like thing, which it is.
I suppose, yeah.
It helps, but I don't think I don't know. I've had very little interaction with like video game companies. I don't know exactly what's required.
Well, it sounds like you know exactly what's required.
Well, I know actually what's required as a, like a fan that like watches like some kind of YouTubes or whatever. But when you're in there, I wonder. It just it sounds like seriously, I would have to just hang it up.
Yeah.
Like everything would have to stop.
Yeah.
Like
it'd be
no
a lot
more
of work, right? Yeah, respect to
TV shows and video games are just too much, like in a sense. Like maybe one day, I don't know, maybe if I have a year, 9 months to spare where I can just lock in and just generate like 40 hours of insane music and maybe have some kind of like musical assistant. I think I would want a musical assistant at that point, which is something that's like bizarre.
To split up the...
Seriously, like just some awesome musician that just kind of is like can generate interesting work off of my motifs or something.
Yeah.
That would be fun.
Yeah.
That sounds enticing somehow, but on my own, like just sitting there trying to figure out like, oh my God, how do we convey best? Like
how do you smooth
an
that
emergency?
Bit over?
Yeah. Oh God.
And all the possibilities of the game. I mean, you'd learn so much about the game. You'd have to play the game, but then also you'd know all that. So for every situation, there'd be so many outcomes. It's really impressive thing, isn't it?
It's pretty much it's peak technology.
Yeah.
To
me,
anyway.
Yeah. So the other thing I was going to say, which people say to me now quite a lot, is they go, so when you watch a film, can you still enjoy the film without thinking about the music in there?
I guess I can at times.
Some people don't even realize there's any music in films. Like,
oh yeah.
I mean, fair enough. Like because it's kind of so
that
well integrated.
That must be beautiful, actually, right? Because at that point, the film is not broken into some kind of components. It's not like you're eating a casserole or whatever, and you can identify all the layers and everything. Like you're just eating and it just tastes
and
good.
And it's happening to you. That's exactly it. And that is part of the
That's the problem.
Skill. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's something that people like, well, that is just at the end. I don't know. That's, to me, that's different to what, certainly I can say for what I do. I don't think I'm achieving that. Maybe that's something later I'll try to achieve. But, you know, people, so you watch a film, you don't feel like you're a bit more hyper aware of that than you were? Or
I am. No, it's I've ruined it for my... I've ruined it. It was my favorite thing.
Right.
It was the thing that I loved the most.
Mm.
More than
God.
Music, I loved film. Music always felt like either I was trying to learn it and not doing that well, or suddenly in bands and doing it.
Okay.
Film was like this thing that I just... It was like this... Like, I obsessed with it as a stan.
Right, okay.
And I loved it, and I didn't know how it worked, and I didn't know anything. That was a great thing. And then now it's so, now it's like a heavily bisected experience, right? Like I'm sitting there, I'm just like, wow, this is impressive. Or I'm like, I can no longer engage with this thing because of component A, B, or C that's throwing me off or distracting me or whatever. So some of that magic is...
It's gone a bit.
Mm.
What about films with no music in there?
Those are the best, right?
Yeah. It's sometimes,
like,
yeah.
For me,
so.
Anyway, it's like a huge relief. It's just so quiet. Like Haneke films are just so quiet and so scary.
So
it's always much scarier.
Man.
No music is so scary.
I can't watch that stuff.
Here's
anymore, man.
Oh, here's a thing. Oh, his films, they're too scary. Yeah, I know. That's real
it
horror.
Just makes me, because it just makes me not... I can't, like, trust... My friends and...
Yeah, it really bugs me out,
so
too.
Clever,
he's like a master of horror, actually.
Mm.
But you're... Whoa, I was going to say this. Do you ever find when you're watching films that where the music is there to like actually add to some sort of... it's like thrillers and horrors and stuff with music. I'm always like so totally skeptical.
Mm.
Nothing scarier than no music at all.
Yeah. It for suspense,
right? Because it's like it just always is like
you got all this
Oh, it's all just a
horrible,
horrible shit. Tension, like it's just programmatic stress.
I think music can do this thing where it does this South Park thing, where you can it can let you access another realm of non-reality, which therefore can make things a bit more kind of extreme. That's what it can do. It can give you like a carpet. So what I'm trying to say, like, cut a long story short, is that if South Park was with real people, then they wouldn't have got away with, well, anything of what they've done. But because they're like roughly cut out, it's animation and stuff, that there's a layer of like the fake layer.
Opens basically up the entire universe of possibility of what's out there.
Yeah, and the same kind of with music, because obviously music doesn't exist in life. So then when you add it in, sometimes you're suddenly in this, you're in a surreal situation, which then means it heightens dramatic possibility. And sometimes when I see a film with no music in it, it makes it feel more like real, like it's really happening. But it kind of depends. I'm trying to think of one without music that I can think of, and they're all actually the ones that are coming to me. Either the music works as page turner, or it's like a documentary.
Right.
But often I don't know. Yeah.
No, you're right. I think it's like it's probably just I'm just like so burnt out. Like, I'm just so burnt out that I'm like, yeah, fuck music and
no,
films.
It's true. It's hard though, because you do notice it.
But yeah. Then some people will be just so impressed with the sort of the thrust of like a really, really intense, a really heavy score, and I'm just always like so. I'm like, maybe it's I'm just projecting. I'm just like so embarrassed for. I'm like, I hope the composer is okay with it being so loud.
Mm.
Like maybe just tuck it away a little bit. Like
you got to think of the actors. That's what I always think of. The actors, they really give themselves over, don't they?
Yeah, definitely. They sacrifice it all.
Yeah, it's such a crazy job. I know we're not here to talk about actors.
Well, that's a lot of gumption, though, to be an actor. It makes our jobs seem like, you know,
cushy,
pretty chill.
Yeah, because when you're an actor, you basically, you kind of just got to put it all in. Also, you're spending all your time. I guess this is maybe a perk. You're spending your time being someone else. Have you ever written music for a film? Have you ever method scored?
Explain.
So if I was to have done the music for like Rocky or something, I go and I train.
Oh, I see.
Every day, and I like wear a mouth shield when I'm writing.
I think so. I didn't even think this was possible until I saw like it was a documentary about Toru Takemitsu, but it was in Japanese, so I didn't understand what I was watching. But I was watching him, and he would go on set and walk around Kurosawa's sets in the fog and just quietly just soak it in.
Heavy, that's cool.
And that's a really good idea.
That's cool, yeah.
And I think there's little things that get taken for granted like that. That is method scoring. And by the way, like I think that should be part of the job.
But you live in New York, and Good Times set in New York, right? Do you feel like, you know, it's in your bones, it's in your experience. You kind of,
yeah.
Maybe you did actually method.
It was method weird. You know what was interesting? I had to go back to my grandparents, who lived like in senior citizen housing in Boston when I was young. And my parents also, we lived in East Boston at the time. We were very poor. Mm. And there was, every day seemed like a logistical nightmare,
mm-hmm,
of getting through some kind of infrastructural problem. Like, where are we going to get the paperwork for this? And when does the government cheese arrive? And oh, this came on Thursday. That means we can't get it again. But there was just always problems. And going to the doctor was everything was a problem. And I think that's what Good Time highlights very effectively about New York, is not the New York. I think it's a misunderstood film on some level, because a lot of people are talking about how it harkens back to some bygone era of filmmaking, but is showing this modern thing. I think it's just effectively showing you what it's like to just have to go from one sort of institutional infrastructural nightmare
to another,
to the next
gatekeeping situation, man.
Yeah. And that is the action of the film, actually. That's where the stress and the, and it's a very, I think, a unique film for that reason. Yeah. But I had to go back a little bit to my childhood instead of New York, because, you know, New York to me is, for as long as I've been here, so it's just been like Brooklyn is like the suburbs, the roughness of an American city.
Right, right.
For people that have to live that way, mm-hmm. that is going to have certain kinds of patterns that emerge. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's always just, it's public transportation, it's hustle. Hospitals, it's where's your next meal ticket? And it's like, who's, everyone's kind of in the soup together and having to wait in queues and do things together and put up with each other. And it's just this endless slog and grind, an infrastructural grind that I think is probably just kind of, maybe it's not even an American thing. It's probably just like a city thing.
It's definitely got a city. Yeah. So Zach, so your method writing was more the city as opposed to New York City.
Yeah. And maybe that was, that's how I kind of was like, cause I really didn't, I was like, oh man, cause they really wanted me to, kind of almost revisit things that I was doing like musically earlier on.
Okay.
In my career, like arpeggios.
Okay.
Sequencers, all that stuff. And I was like a little recalcitrant to do it, but then I think I rationalized it by being like, no, but this is actually very appropriate for the city, right?
Okay,
because
yeah,
it's
yeah.
just blocks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Building blocks and...
And rote repetition of...
Yeah, yeah, of course. Yeah.
Mm. Surviving some urban nightmare just sounds like a sequencer to me.
I suppose with Under the Skin, I was I was relating it to being a teenager. That was my experience of it, because she's like, she's having these new experiences, meeting all these people and kind of catching this experience of having feelings and emotions for the first time. And obviously that's not, you have emotions before you're a teenager, but kind of big rushes of emotions that could convince you to kind of leave the life that you've been provided, which is kind of what she did. She kind of, so the character in the film, she's working for an organization of some kind. And because she kind of starts to discover her feelings and herself, she takes a risk and cuts out of that whole life. And that's like rebel. She's a rebel, basically. Yeah, but I think there's something to it, though, you know?
No, I do.
I think it could be quite fun. Obviously, method can be psychologically damaging, but depending on what... I feel like, why not? Just wear the stuff, even. You know,
I
like,
love
wear
those.
All day. Like.
I love thinking about films in this kind of material way. Like, there's just so much possibility. It's almost like it's too much. It's like I feel like a kid in a... candy store. And I love this kind of thing. I love it even more than fantasizing about the inner thoughts of characters, which is fun as well. Mm-hmm. But the real excitement to me of scoring a lot of the time is capturing like the atmosphere of the place, mm-hmm. the atmosphere of the objects, and in addition to the sort of human desires that you kind of have to tangle with. But I don't really like Mickey Mousing all the psychological shit that much. Mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm. I don't... That's kind of more like... That, to me, is in directing and writing, and it's in performance. To me, the score is like this sculptural object in a film that quietly influences your sense. It, like, makes the flat
three
image
dimensions.
3D.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, 100%.
And I really, really enjoy that. A lot. I love that, because it's like an opportunity to kind of further like fantasize about what music could actually feel like
in the film. Yeah, yeah, that's cool.
Did you ever in your classical studies back in the day encounter like all the stuff about Stravinsky kind of rebelling against his teacher Prokofiev, who is like trying to say every sound has to be like a distinct sounds, distinct melodies have to represent things like a river or a dog or whatever.
I don't know that particular story. No,
I guess there was this time when it was like Tchaikovsky and Prokofiev and these really, really kind of overt relationship of music to dance and opera and stuff like that. And these Russian composers were basically saying like, music has to be like a perfect metaphor for like real life things. Mm. And Stravinsky came along and he's like, that's so lame. Like, it really, really shouldn't be like that. But then I kind of feel like maybe what 20th century music and electronic music and all the is like, we're almost kind of this strange hybrid. We're performing this multifaceted job now where it's kind of you can think like in this really, really Mickey Mouse-y way. That's very interesting, I think. Any sound at your disposal to choose from. I think those questions about what things represent become really interesting. And you can confuse it. You don't have to try to perfectly represent something. That is totally uninteresting to me. Mm. But it is kind of curious that with electronic music, you can really kind of build these very, very interesting little jewels.
100%. Yeah, you can have different physical environments that electronic music can exist in, which could help that as well.
Yeah, it's just very trippy to me.
Mm.
But you also said something that's very important before, which is like anchoring the possibility of the promise of being able to do like anything and how it's helpful to make some very discrete decisions.
That's helpful for me. That's helpful. That's how I've done it so far, yeah.
Electronic music gets a really bad rap because it seems frivolous to people. For me, it's like, it's kind of an embarrassment of riches to be able to just like go and pull out any sound, any texture, any keyboard sound from any period, copy any instrument, simulate a chamber orchestra. Like, you can basically do it all. So what do? Part of the fun for me is actually being like super frivolous too, and just being like
putting it all out there. Yeah.
Kind of just making these very wrong decisions and strange things happening at the same time that probably shouldn't be intertwined. That's exciting to me.
Yeah, no, that sounds exciting. I guess by doing that, maybe you're encountering your own world or some.
Inevitably.
Yeah.
Inevitably, like, your personality will emerge, yeah. Will get in the way of your cosmic travels. All right, next thing. What are some of your favorite film scores, Mika?
Oh, shit. This is
a tough one, but... I like cheesy things and memorable motifs, like highly melodic things like Cannibal Holocaust, like... Na 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 na. I like just the stupid little things you can whistle in.
That get in your head.
Mm, yeah, I like frivolous, crazy, giallo.
Okay, yeah.
Stuff I won't. You know, it's like it's almost like so much is so ubiquitous that you don't even need to know. Like, it just hits you, and you're just like in that moment. It's like it's like candy. You love it while it's happening, and then afterwards, it's like just gone.
Yeah.
I like that kind of thing.
Yeah. I kind of like, I do enjoy when I watch a film, I do enjoy. The last film that I really enjoy, I really liked watching Scarface recently. I enjoyed all the music in that.
Yes.
I mean, I know that's a classic one, but.
No, it has like an incredible. It has like an incredible swagger.
Yeah, and it's just so not. It's just 100. I don't know. I really.
Yeah, I like that too. I like 100, and I like stuff that seems like it was just made independently of the film.
Yeah, I mean, but it does that. It has that thing, but it's all the same. I feel like that does a good job of those two things. What you've been saying, like the physical environment.
Yeah.
The clothes, the cars. The guns, all of that stuff. The music's got that, but it's also got like Tony Soprano. Not Tony Soprano. What's his chop?
Montana.
Tony Montana, you know. Yeah.
The other Tony.
Yeah, I feel like he would rate that record. Like he wouldn't recommend that record. He wouldn't like the music that's in the film. I feel like
they have to like it.
He wouldn't mind it. If he heard it, he'd be like, yeah, this is, I like, you know. It covers both those two elements, you know, the physical environment and all of that. And it does the job in the film in that storytelling way. And also, yeah, it's like part of his outfit, whatever. Yeah, he'd be into it. Yeah.
I love that. I actually really love that. Like, I think the next time I'm working, I'm going to ask myself if the character would be into just like it. Fundamentally into it or embarrassed by what I was doing.
To be honest with you, that's actually how I had to do Jackie.
Wow.
Yeah, because I just...
Yeah, because of the gravity of the character too.
Yeah, so famous. I was
exactly,
just like,
yeah.
Well, what would she listen to?
Yeah, you're right. The score, the score was actually quite interesting on that level too. It's like the... it's her life and her death in rap. That's what music can do, right? It doesn't have to just be the jewel. It doesn't have to be her pearl necklace. It can be,
which is what I wore when I was writing it.
Unlike
a pink.
Really?
No.
But it can be ever. It can be the whole thing, right? Like, I think a good score is kind of
Scarface. I think does that, and it's a soundtrack. It's kind of like, that's a good. I mean, I don't know. It's probably not the best example, but that is a good. Everything came together for that. And I bet so much music would have been made out of that soundtrack as well. Like sampled.
Oh, completely. You know what? Like, I was watching this interview with RZA, who was talking about like how...
So much film sampling, right?
He was talking like Prokofiev, actually. He was really suggesting that like sound can trigger this very specific relationship to environment, like, and he was like, this sound makes me think of like when you've missed the train and you can still hear it in the distance. And I was like, whoa, that's extremely provocative, because it's like what you're saying isn't just the sound of the train, you're saying it's the sound of you feeling that you've missed something that's gone away from you. That's insane. And so you know, that's I love that kind of stuff. I really do. I don't know. I don't know.
That was the last question, right? Yeah, let's go eat.
Yeah, yeah, let's
Thank
be
you
done.
Very much.
Thank you.
Thanks. Okay. That was really hard.
Thanks for listening. The A24 podcast is produced by us, A24. Special thanks to our editor, Tom Wyatt, and Robot Repair, who composed our theme.